broadcasting live from the Orlando Orange County Convention Center for HIMSS 17. It's This Just In. Now, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
So, very excited about our next segment. Two phenomenal guests. Thank you, Karen. That's great.
Live on-air selfie.
Yes, it's fantastic. I love it. Dr. Karen DeSalvo and Susie Grzancic, Principal, Health Advisory from EY. And Dr. Karen DeSalvo, former National Coordinator of the ONC and Acting Assistant Secretary of HHS.
Yes.
Correct. Excellent.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Fantastic. And thank you very much for joining us back on air again. And thank you for doing a selfie on air again.
Of course. So happy to be here.
No, you guys are wonderful, and thank you. So the segment came up for Women in Health IT and all the great work that you both are doing. So we want to take a little bit of a fresh start there. But before we dive in too deep into the dialogue, I first of all want to take a moment to thank you, Karen, for all your work that you've done. You've been a phenomenal collaborator, and you still are. But when you were national coordinator and working on Capitol Hill, we as an industry, I come from the vendor side as well, and you, your team, were just phenomenal collaborators. And I think we were able to get a lot done, still a lot more to accomplish, but we just always appreciated working with you and working with your team. And so I want to say thank you for your service in the government.
Well, Justin, thank you. It was really my pleasure to get to serve you and the American people. And we wanted to have a big tent and an open door because we serve you. You are the boss, not you particularly, Justin,
right.
But everybody,
yes.
All the taxpayers and others who are getting service from us. And it was a real joy. And I'm so thrilled that so many of the team there are going to be able to keep carrying forward on that kind of approach.
Yep. Nope. Thank you. So before we dive into the segment specifically, what have you been up to over the last couple of months? And
well, it's been just 4 weeks,
Yeah. But
it's been a really nice respite. I think as many people advised me, they said to run through the tape as a runner. I really understood that. Do some negative splits. Make sure you get everything done that you can, that you want to get done. And then take a rest because it's important to really reflect upon not only what you accomplished, where you think there's still opportunity to make a difference with your skills and your interests. And so that's exactly the process that I'm in. I have to say, it's hard to let go. You never do that because you're in love with all the work that you've been doing and, mm-hmm. and all the people engaged. But I've just been taking a bit of time to really think about where we all need to go next.
And you were you did a lot of work in the public health sector
mm-hmm.
Before you came onto the ONC.
Yes.
And obviously some of your passions there, but are there other sectors or other passions that you might have, or what do you think for the future?
Life coach, Justin. Well, you know, I'm a doctor first,
yeah.
and I spent 20 years of my life practicing medicine and teaching people to practice medicine and running healthcare settings from primary care and being engaged in hospital management. And at the time of Hurricane Katrina, my course shifted, and I was engaged in research at the time and teaching and administration and clinical care, the community came first, and I got more and more engaged in policy, which led me not only to be the health commissioner for the city of New Orleans, but eventually to
yep.
Washington. And
sure.
where I capped off my time in HHS was as Assistant Secretary for Health, as you say, and focused quite a bit on how we can really improve the health of all people, leveraging tools like healthcare, but recognizing that there's more to health than healthcare, that the fact that your geography, your zip code matters more than your genetic code
sure.
is going to require all of us to really not only leverage data, but leverage the tools and resources we have to bring health. You know, this is a time in history when we have so much opportunity, but we're even still seeing declines in life expectancy and widening
yes.
gaps. And so I want to try to understand how, not only me personally, but how we can bring all the great resources and thinking in this country to bear to make that not the case so that we can reverse that curve and close that gap.
I love it. No, that's fantastic. So, Susie Grzancic, thank you for joining us. This is your first
Absolutely.
Time on the show. And you've been involved with discussions with HIMSS and Women in Health IT. And I believe it's the Women Fast Forward Initiative from EY. So tell us about that and tell what you guys are working on.
Sure. So Women Fast Forward is really trying to look at the perception out in the industry that gender pay parity and gender equality is probably a lot further progressed than it really is. And so what Women Fast Forward tries to do is start a conversation at an international level around those issues based in fact, talking to business leaders around the world. And what EY's tried to do is take a leadership role in that conversation and to really think about how do we accelerate gender pay parity. So I'd probably cite two different reports. One is actually through HIMSS, where they looked at some longitudinal data from 2006 to 2015 and said, you know, what is the difference in women healthcare IT, essentially their pay versus men in comparable fields? And over that time, it's been about a 3% gap it's actually worsened. And then you look at something like the World Economic Forum, and they focused on looking at gender pay parity. And between 2014 and 2016, another 30-some years were added in terms of their longitudinal look to say, when would we reach gender pay parity? So when we look at the numbers, our perception is not reality.
Very good point. So you brought up the World Economic Forum. Do you work with them at all? This gentleman, Oliver Olivier, I met last week in Atlanta, who is over from Paris, who works on the forum, and I guess he leads strategy, but he's working on value-based care models globally. So I don't know if I just came across him for the first time in my life.
But. So we don't work for the Economic Forum so much as trying to make sure that we work with them and incorporate information that they're putting out around reports and things like that into that global conversation. Because the more often that you can make it fact-based and bring it to life and really look at something that's an international body of study, we think that's where you'll see some of the biggest impact and acceptance around numbers.
I completely agree. So what do you see? Are we making progress or where are we with the pay gap and with women in healthcare IT?
So again, I'd have to point to that HIMSS study around specifically women in healthcare IT, and that was about, I think, 2.7% was it actually worsened about 3% over their study period of time. It showed that it was a little bit worse when you looked at some of the senior ranks of leadership. And I think that just speaks to the level of focus and perception and measurement that is probably not happening at the right level to make sure that real progress is being made. So I think it's an area that needs as much focus to improve those numbers as anything.
So, and you won the award, is that?
There are a few of us, actually, that are awardees, of the Women of Influence in Health IT.
Yes.
It's really quite an honor.
So tell us about that, and tell us, you know, the direction for that and what you guys hope to accomplish beyond the obvious of more income.
I'm going to let Susie say more about the awards, but I want to just thank HIMSS and thank Carla Smith and others for and the committee for launching it. It's important that we make sure we're recognizing role models and lifting up people who are going to be approachable, accessible, and be willing to help mentor the next generation, not just of women in health IT, but men as well. But I think it's an important and valuable opportunity to make certain that women know that health IT is a big tent and that we are going to welcome in the best and the brightest and the most eager. It's one of the things I love about the health IT community is it is welcoming, it's open to innovation and new ideas, and it's important, I believe, that HIMSS has really spotlighted the value that women are bringing to health IT and the need for us to make sure that we're recognizing role models and allowing for that pipeline to really build.
And when Karen speaks to that concept of recognizing role models, one of the things that we focus a lot on is how do you illuminate the path to leadership?
Yes.
So I think one of the pain points for everyone is you have some women doing incredible things within the health IT space, and yet you look at kind of the generation coming up or people interested in those types of careers, and they don't necessarily see a path or see that, you know, arms wide open, the tent is open to come around them and help them also think about the innovations that they can make in IT and the steps they can take in their career, because we are wrestling with such big, gnarly problems within healthcare that we need every mind focused on them, and that gender equality is part of it. The diversity of thinking that you'll see between men and women, different cultures all coming together is what's going to start really making progress.
I want to layer on top of that, Justin, that, you know, it's obvious I was the first female national coordinator, and was simply more than anything, I think, an opportunity for women in the field to see the chair held by someone who was like them. I would say also that during my time at ONC, at the Office of National Coordinator, I was really deliberate about increasing diversity not only on my own team and not just based on gender, but on background, race and ethnicity, and we wanted to do that on our advisory committees as well. I think one of our responsibilities in the federal space was to make sure that we were setting the tone that this has got to be a big tent and people are going to have opportunity.
So what are some of the best practices there? Because, I mean, I've been fortunate to have a couple companies and so forth, and how do you advise us, or how can we get better, and what do we look out for, and what can we do? What are some best practices there?
So one of the things we tried to do with NEY was talk to global business leaders, and we talked to men and women, and I think it was about 400 around the world, as well as trying to draw from our own experiences. And we said, what are things that could essentially accelerate or create some quantum leaps around gender diversity and advancing women in a profession? And I think one we just mentioned was really illuminating that path to leadership, providing sponsorship, which is really putting your personal weight and brand behind individuals versus mentoring, which is having conversations and coaching, showing that role model where it's possible. So Karen showed it's possible, and it's something that's very valuable to take on. And then also thinking about creating corporate policies that create a foundation to allow for women to be successful as they continue through the ranks and through their leadership roles. And then really one of the hardest ones is trying to make sure that you're weeding out unconscious as well as conscious bias. And I can give an interesting example
when
we're ready, but it's just, it's probably the hardest one to fight. Unconscious bias, by its very nature, is you're not thinking about it, and it's just the way you're reacting to situations.
We when I was in academics, I was one of the usually the only female in the room, actually, and I was really early in my academic career, but it evolved over time, and it evolved because of deliberate thinking on the part of the entire team, male and female, that we needed to make sure we had a diversity of opinion and we were inclusive in providing opportunities for a pathway to leadership. And academics and medicine have been increasingly successful in that sphere. But there's a subtle piece to this, which is worth just pointing out, that sometimes there's a need to have, I'll call it cross-gender mentoring. So a mentor as a woman to have a male mentor, and because they're going to have networks that maybe senior people above you didn't have. And so this isn't just about women mentoring or being role models for women. This is about everyone recognizing talent and being willing to foster it and support it and think about it as, again, a big tent and an opportunity for the best ideas to come forward.
So a couple things that come to mind around that, very much that concept of needing men to act in those same sponsorship roles, not just having a one-on-one woman-to-woman mentorship or sponsorship. For example, Steve Howe within our EY team is our America's Managing Partner, and he's the head of our inclusiveness organization as well as his larger role, because it's that visible leadership both with men and women talking about this that's going to make some change. I can share thinking through some team assignments myself, and it's about opportunities that get presented. So when I talked about unconscious bias, young female leader on our team, there was an international opportunity coming up, and one of the unconscious biases might say you have a young family, you probably don't want to travel, and so I or someone else might never put that opportunity in front of you because I've essentially almost made that decision for you, thinking I know best, or I know the difficulty of potentially raising a family and traveling. Putting the control and providing the opportunities back in the hands of that woman and maybe giving good counsel and mentorship around it is really more important than filtering opportunities. It's broadening the opportunities.
It's an excellent analogy.
Because that person might actually have a support structure that said, go international. Right. You know, I'll back you up.
Yep. Nope, that's fantastic. So tell me, what's coming up in 2017, or maybe even around, you can talk about HIM 17 in the next couple of days. Is there something that we should look out for? Are there a couple of sessions that that would be educational? Because you just bring up a very good point that that's subconscious in some ways. Mm-hmm. So I love that example. So where can we learn as an industry, as individuals?
Well, I know we're having a roundtable in the morning at 9 a.m., and I don't know the room number, but it's a Women in Health IT roundtable, so I'll be there, others will be there. It's a great opportunity, I think, for a more informal dialogue. There is an event this evening where for the awardees. Then, of course, there's always the HIT checks, which are always out in force and tweeting, and they have a meetup tomorrow. And I think it's at 10 or 11, and maybe somebody will tweet about it and make sure that we know when that is. They're a fun group of really energetic.
Oh, yeah. Jen Denard is part of that. She was on my radio show a couple weeks ago.
And they always they always make me smile and laugh. And then there's a women's reception, which
just this evening. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing, as you say, what to look forward to is thinking about content within HIMSS in the coming years that actually focus on some of those things, illuminating that path to leadership. I mean, the Women in Healthcare IT Awards are one way to see great examples this evening, people to look up to model, and to get to know. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot more we can do, and we can be very, very specific and pragmatic about making real change and measuring that.
I completely agree. And Denise Hines is another just role model for all of this as well. She's a very dear friend, and I know she's involved in this initiative as well.
We have a great team at ONC. Don't forget them. I'm not with them any longer.
You do.
But like,
yes,
you know, Elise Anthony and Lisa Lewis. Rebecca Freeman. There's just a lot of really others that I would ask folks to seek out, because sometimes they're in the government, and so you don't always think of that. But by the way, government parity pay is pretty nice, because they often publish your pay. So it's easy.
Good point.
Yeah.
What about coming up with EY or this year in 2017? What initiatives should we look out for, or that we're going to hear about maybe coming in 2017 around this?
So I think you're going to continue to see that concept of women fast forward out in the market. There's definitely things that have been spoken about at Davos, panels that were there, a lot of global forums at International Women's Day coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks here. That will be kind of being bold and taking on that challenge around gender pay and diversity is coming up. And I think you're just going to continue to see corporate and social policy and just really a focus in the market and telling those stories about women IT leaders and just women, inspirational women's leadership stories, and how to build those networks and those formal programs that can actually lead to women in leadership roles.
Carrying that theme and kind of our closing here, what advice would you offer women in health IT and in our sector, and what best practices might you point out to them?
So I think the first thing I would say is to keep such a broad mind to what types of opportunities can come up. And I think about the women I've worked with both on our payer and provider sides who might have been a nurse practitioner, and suddenly start to see that they're loving data and analytics. And they start to then bridge across once opportunities and sponsorship are there to say, all right, you know what, I can be an informatics leader because I know the business. I know how to put patients at the center of care. And now I can also start to bring and wrap around things like the data analytics and innovative ways to refocus the industry. So I think it's that concept of that broad mindset, coaching people about their opportunities, and then really measuring whether there's true progress being made and keeping that going. Because the problem is you stop and then you think you've made progress and you haven't.
I think there's an intentionality around management and leadership that people must take into account no matter who they are, and really be thoughtful about whether you've got the kind of diversity of thought on your team, not just diversity of gender. I want to not get out of here without making the point that as we're thinking about diversity, we need to think along many lines, including race and ethnicity.
Yes,
it's an important area of work that we need to do in health IT. And I would just make a plug for the broader pipeline, the importance of reaching even more deeply into high schools, junior high, and really encouraging young women to feel comfortable, or continue to feel comfortable with math, STEM careers, because we want to make sure that we're letting them know that they have value, that they're valuable, and that they're completely capable of doing it.
Such cool programs, whether it's Girls Who Code, the different conferences and forums, but I think it's knowing about those, creating the opportunity, and really having parents, teachers, educators, and people within the payer and provider practice going out into the schools and educating them to this is what it's like to develop a product that could suddenly be a wearable for a patient. And how does it feel knowing that your grandmother or your mother or your father are actually using those things and you could create the next generation of that?
Excellent point. No, Jen Denard on a radio show a couple weeks ago talked about Girls Who Code, that initiative. So that's fantastic. And you brought up a neat point, because I just did this, and I'm going to see her in a few minutes. But I just hired a nurse to lead my clinical strategy for one of my companies. And she she's amazing in her own right, but having such a, that clinical background, and then she's also, she knows pop health, she knows analytics, she knows quality reporting, and so she's going to be an amazing leader in that, and I'm certainly going to help and support.
You've already written her performance review. She's going to be like, I'm going to phone in this year.
But you know, a lot of work to do.
And nursing has an advantage on the physician training community because they've been engaged in nursing informatics. So she, right, it's just becomes a natural part of what they're learning as part of their curricula, which is so exciting.
And we need more of these people every day in healthcare. And yes, that need is only growing as
especially
well.
Especially as we're doing more care coordination, right, and more reaches across, you know, across other disciplines. As physicians, we just aren't trained as well in that, and nurses definitely are. So I think there's great opportunity.
One of the points I love about that is repurposing your career. That, I mean, I think that's just a key thing as well, is that you don't necessarily have to grow into a technology career as your high school on up goal. It often is a position you take as you start to advance your career and see possibilities.
Very true. Ladies, fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. Susie Grzanik, Dr. Karen DeSalvo, thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you, Justin.
You guys are
terrific. Enjoy hymns.
Thank you. You as well. Take care.